Education is one of the key responsibilities of provincial governments in Canada. With costs of education going up, provinces are looking for new models from other jurisdictions on how to build schools and fund programs. Joining me today to discuss some of the trends in education financing elsewhere in North America is Paul Olson, president of the Manitoba Teachers Society. Thanks for coming in today, Paul.
Thanks for having me.
In 2011 in Alberta, the government there announced that it would build 35 new schools using a public-private partnership approach, P3 approach, in which a private company would be responsible for designing, building, and maintaining the schools over a 30-year period. How does this differ from the way schools are traditionally built?
Well, that's a pretty loaded question. The normal model for a public school is that government will determine a need for a school, the population has to be there, and then they'll go to contract. Public School Finance Board in Manitoba will approve funding, it'll be tendered, and then it'll be built. But I think the key difference is that at the end of that process, the school belongs to the public or to one of the public school divisions. When you're looking at a P3 model, essentially it is built by private investors. There may be some government money or none, but at the end of the day, it's a building owned by a corporation or a company, and essentially the school system is leasing the space for use as a school. And so they end up renting rather than owning.
And the P3, as it's being described here, talks about a 30-year agreement. What happens to the school at the end of the 30 years? Does it go back to the public sector, or would a new lease be arranged, or how does that work?
That's a great question. I don't know, because we don't have any of these in the Manitoba context. I would imagine that would simply be a matter for either a contract renewal, so a lease renewal, as you say, or it may revert to the public system in some cases for P3s, but that would depend on the individual contract.
Now, the government of Alberta claims that this would save $43 million for taxpayers. Where are these savings coming from?
The numbers tend to be highly suspect. In whatever research I've done on this, the auditors general of any number of provinces, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, Alberta, BC, have all come out and basically slammed their respective governments for beginning to think that this would save a dime. These really make the books for any given government look really good, because instead of the capital outlay for building a new school, they basically outsource it. The risk or the initial capital expenditure goes to a company. So if you're in power, if you're the government of the day, you look incredibly great by keeping down costs on public education. The reality of these things is that over time, with cost overruns and with all the expenses involved in leasing and leasehold improvements and a la carte changes to the building over time, that you don't end up saving a penny. And in point of fact, the public purse normally gets drained even more in being involved in P3 agreements.
Well, I remember when we were looking at the water agreement here a couple of years ago, the legal costs alone, the number of lawyers that the city would have to hire for that agreement would cost millions of dollars. And I'm sure it's a similar case with these education P3s.
Well, the education P3s certainly do have a lot of professional consultancy involved, so there's certainly that overhead. But I think the key question to be kept in mind is, honestly, why would a private company get involved with something unless there was a profit motive? And that's fine. That doesn't make them evil. That makes them a business, and that's fine. But if you're thinking in terms of it being a break-even proposition, which they're supposed to be in the public system, why would anyone think that you would partner with a for-profit entity and somehow not be charged more than the services were worth? That's just ludicrous, and anyone thinking that math makes sense is probably best placed somewhere other than public leadership.
Now, recently, the Calgary Herald reported that for a number of the schools, there's been a delay in the process because of a lack of bidders. Is there a risk that lack of competition could result in the government watering down the standards of what's needed for the new schools?
Well, that's certainly one of the risks. I know that one of the concerns that I've heard around P3s is that you end up having public money financing builds or construction sites which may or may not be particularly careful about workplace safety and health standards or working conditions for staff. So you end up in a very uncomfortable ethical position there as a taxpayer and as a citizen. There are certainly cost overruns possible in any project, but the notion that there is this beautiful transfer of risk from public to private companies is frankly overstated, because ultimately you're looking at public money to pay for most of this.
I think the most important question to ask is how this affects the education children receive.
Well, when the rubber hits the road, if you're looking at working in a space that is not controlled by the school division, then you're looking at a teacher or a school working in a place that is essentially viewed by its owners as an office building. And if you want changes to that space, you're looking at a leasehold improvement or something comparable to that. If I, as a teacher in a classroom, need something for my students, I can typically go to my school principal, who will in turn go to the school board, who were elected publicly and who are publicly accountable to make sure that the schools have what is necessary to deliver the education that kids need. A P3 creates a system where you have people who are not publicly accountable, who are on a company's board, for example, ultimately making decisions about what will or will not be provided, or at least charging a mighty surcharge to include or to improve things in the school over time. So it can have a real-world impact in terms of what kids have access to, in terms of resourcing, in terms of learning space. And if there are other incursions into the professional autonomy piece, I haven't actually heard of these, but it doesn't seem like much of a stretch to me to think that if a company is providing the chalkboards and the desks and the chairs and the building, that they may one day want to create a contract where they're also dictating what some of the learning materials might be. And that'll be a very sad day for public education in Canada.
Is there a concern that this could be something that that would happen here in Manitoba?
Well, there's always that concern. I know that the temptation to go with a P3 would be very great for any politician, because governments rise and fall on a 4-year cycle. And P3s are 20 or 30 year agreements, and the attractiveness to an elected person or to a government for P3s is honestly that it looks good on the books right now. You look like you're a brilliant fiscal manager, and the misery comes long after you're gone and golfing in Florida. So have I heard of any such initiatives for public education in Manitoba? No, I have not. But I could certainly imagine some future government finding the notion attractive, despite the fact that any number of provinces have tried them and that they've failed miserably.
So it's not just P3s that that people are looking around for as other new financing models. Another model that people are looking to Alberta for and to other jurisdictions is the idea of charter schools. Earlier this year, a group of inner-city advocates went to New York to see a model of how charter schools are used there to benefit inner-city neighborhoods. And then just recently, an op-ed in the Winnipeg Free Press by one of the participants, former Liberal candidate Alan Wise, criticized what he characterized as an inflexible teachers' union for being resistant to a project here in Manitoba to introduce charter schools. And he wrote, "Charter schools set performance standards for teachers who are regularly evaluated and are expected to perform to measurable standards set by the school. This would ensure that teachers have a vested interest in teaching as a vocation, not just as employment. Are performance standards for teachers what are needed to improve education in Winnipeg's inner city?"
Wow, there are just so many pieces to that, I'm not even sure where to start. Teachers in Manitoba are regularly evaluated. It is normally carried out by the principal of the school, and there are certainly well-understood standards of professional conduct and professional practice in the public education system. The difficulty that people have when they talk about performance standards is that they're used to referring to things that they borrow from business. If you and I work in a car dealership and we're selling exactly the same product, then we can look at the end of the month and see who sold more cars. That's quite easy. We're selling the same product. We're selling it to the same public. This is easy. But from one school to another, and one classroom to another, and one grade to another, the student needs and student demographics and the population you're dealing with are so radically different that the notion that you could set up some kind of fake impartial standard in terms of student performance or other criteria, it's somewhere between the sublime and the absurd. the evaluation does happen here. The professional standards do exist. They cannot be codified in a nice, simple checklist. And I know that makes a lot of people uncomfortable, but that is the nature of a field that fundamentally melds art and science. It's not something you can put on a Cracker Jack box, and I understand that that frustrates some people, but there's a lot of work that goes into the getting a teacher ready to begin their career, and then there's ongoing professional development, both as a matter of practice and as a legal requirement of every teacher in this province.
So beyond the examples that we've discussed today, looking at charter schools or P3s, are there programs that you could cite here in Winnipeg or from other jurisdictions that will be alternative and attractive ideas to help improve education for inner city youth here in Winnipeg? Because I think that's one of the areas that a lot of our listeners are really concerned about.
Very much so. There's all kinds of really good innovation going on at a grassroots level in any number of divisions and schools. The reality that many teachers are grappling with is that we focus on our professional practice and what we can best do in our schools to help the kids we teach. But the fundamental reality is that kids are human beings, and they come to school with any number of needs and challenges on a daily basis. And so some of the programs that will have the greatest impact on learning and the greatest impact on school outcomes are not, in fact, school programs. They are housing initiatives. They are food security initiatives. They are anti-poverty initiatives, because you can have the best program and the best resources and the best teaching in the world, but that doesn't matter if the kid can't make it to school, and that can't matter if they've been up half the night working a lousy minimum wage job to help pay bills at home. So there are any number of things going on. There are music programs, there are theater and other access programs going on. There are access programs that have been created to get underrepresented people into the teaching profession to help give kids role models that they need and see leaders from within their own community standing at the front of the classroom, because that is a big deal and that's important to a lot of kids. But what is really needed at the local level is usually best decided at the local level. When you're talking about provincial level policy, it should be enabling more than prescriptive, because a lot of creativity is happening, but it needs room to breathe. And I'm seeing some really good things in different schools depending on the division and the needs.
Well, thanks so much for coming in to speak with us again today.
Hey, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
It's always great having Paul Olson here. I've been speaking with Paul Olson, president of the Manitoba Teachers Society. You're listening to Mud and Water on CKUW 95.9 FM.